Yeah.
You good?
Yeah, I'm like the least computer savvy person in the world, so.
Dude, I have the stupidest problems myself. Like the other day I was trying to connect my AirPods to this device that I'm podcasting from right now. It's my Mac, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. And then I did figure then it like occurred to me while I was driving home and I ran off into a ditch.
Right there, that aha moment, your brain just melts. Yeah, I know those. I know those moments. That's funny, man. How you been?
Good, dude. How about yourself?
I've been good. I've been good. Staying busy, keeping things going at the gym, and trying to get to some semblance of normalcy again with everything going on. So.
I know, man. It's been a wild, almost full. I mean, it's been a wild year. I know that they're saying. I saw some evidence where they were saying COVID was dips as far back into like October,
Yeah.
based off of like blood or plasma that they had found COVID present that had
That's
been taken or
crazy.
done. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think some of the like I know like my girl and her kids, like they were sick back then, and like we were just like, oh well, it's the flu, like but like her oldest, like she was out, like couldn't breathe out, like had to lay on the bed and couldn't move for 2 days out.
That's crazy, man. I
Yeah.
mean, court. I will say, like, everybody likes to be like, well, this person, they're in good shape. They have this blood type, whatever. Like, Corb is in great shape. She's a type O positive, or O negative, whichever. I don't know which one of the O's that's the best, but she's the best O type. Whatever they
Yeah,
said, like,
of
you weren't
course.
supposed to be affected. Like it didn't matter. I mean, I remember I was sitting here in the studio teaching a history class because I was quarantined. I was doing it like this.
Yeah.
And she was like, I can't breathe. Like I'm freaking out. And I was
That's
just
crazy,
like,
man.
yeah, it was, man. She had
That's
symptoms
crazy.
for like over 10 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
She's doing good now, though.
Oh yeah, she is.
Yeah, it's really
And I
good.
don't think she hasn't had any follow-up issues, but a lot of people have.
That's what I've been hearing too.
I know,
So,
yeah.
and it's one of those things, man, where like I get both sides of it, but I just as long as we can keep doing martial arts, that's all I care about. So,
Hey, which is what we're here to talk about, bro.
yes,
Okay.
that's true.
So,
That's true.
particularly, like, I'm trying to do a series of podcasts on this kind of stuff.
Tai Chi Kwon
Right.
Do, it's a great book, man. Bruce Lee
Dude, yeah.
was a maniac when it came to philosophies, man. He was definitely the fourth, people talk about Hoist Gracie a lot, and of course he's the one who definitely made it famous on a big scale for fighters. But I would definitely say Bruce Lee, he is the forefather of mixed martial arts, with his principles and his ideas. Yeah, so I definitely agree. It's something that if you are a martial artist, if you are a combative competitor, or if you just really like theology and philosophy, like looking into Bruce Lee's, mindset and how he saw the world, and just it's definitely something that I take with me most days of my life. So.
Man, I will say, like, I'm really, recall fondly many conversations we've had about JKD principles, trapping, Filipino martial arts. And, I had Big John on the podcast the other day, and we
Oh
were
yeah,
talking.
I bet that was fun.
It was, dude. I had a great time talking to him. But, man, I was telling him, like, this is like a group of people that I always come back to, Greg Nelson, Ina Santo, Vunak Chai, that this kind of always come back around in my circle of like looking at great martial artists and instructors. And man, like JKD, like I have like a different category from all of the things I've learned from those people, and
Yeah.
I kind of lump Chai in with those guys because they all trained with him. But
Ajahn, yeah.
even Eric Paulson, man, like how it's so fascinating watching like old school, like the old blue background in Asano tapes from like 2000 with like Eric Paulson's his uke. But man, it's fascinating how all these people are connected. And I mean, I have a login to the Chai's World Thai Boxing website, and there's it's so much good stuff on there. Like,
yeah, and like I think with Chai, what made him so interesting, you know, was like within the JKD realm, you know, you look at like Terry Gibson, Larry Hartzell, like he was one of those guys, you know, like Mark McFan and Greg Nelson, Eric Paulson, like those guys were like us. They were the kids. You just following around these old crazy dudes who just like to beat each other up. But like, lo and behold, you know, now Greg and Eric and, you know, all these guys are, they're the next big deal, you know, like when you see, you know, Brock Lesnar, Rose Namajunas, Pat Barry, Josh Barnett, you see all these different fighters, and it's like, who are your coaches? Oh man. And like it always blew my mind, you know, because Ajahn, I didn't really see him, like he was just a Muay Thai, crazy Muay Thai, crazy uncle Muay Thai guy. You know, and then I started looking into the history of him, and like he really kind of was a forefront of boxing in Muay Thai. You know, before it was elbows, knees, kicks. Like they didn't really pay attention to punches because it was such a clinch heavy game. And he was kind of the guy that was coming in and like knocking people out with like good combinations and stuff. And then like I started kind of looking into that whole thing. It's just like, yeah, even Ajahn, like being around that JKD influence, even being that old school kind of like, you know, Muay Thai style, like he was able to adapt and blend this thing that hadn't been seen before in Muay Thai. And it's really cool whenever you go do a seminar with him. It's scary doing seminars with Ajahn because he likes to hit you. But it's good for you, you know. He'll do that, you know, because, like, Ajahn's that guy, like, where, like, he's talking to you and you got to have your hands up while he's talking to you. But then he'll try to trick you and, like, he'll be hitting pads with him. He'll be like, keep your hands up, so keep your hands up. You know, hey, how old are you? And you, like, put your hands down. You'll be like, what? And he'll hit you in the face. He's like, you got to keep your hands up. And she's like, ah, I'm bad, okay. You know, he likes to mess with people a lot. But his hands are fast, man. And then, like, it was so cool to see going through it, you know, and seeing that kind of blend of the Western boxing with this, you know, Thai style. Yeah, I loved it. I love watching that stuff kind of adapt and turn into it.
See, you know, I found out about Chai through Caleb. You know, he did a bunch of seminars, and there's a funny story. So there's this old training partner of mine named Maverick. Like we had like kickboxing fights on the same card back in like 2008, right? Yeah. But he went to one of these Chai seminars with Caleb in Tulsa, and they were just doing the march, you know. Apparently he just came over and just dumped Caleb, like foot swept him or kicked his legs out from under him in some way, and was like, you're doing it wrong.
Yep. That's what he does, man. He said, you know, he doesn't mean it. He means it from a place of love. You know, he really does. Like, it's just, he's so old school and like that Thai style, like they're just blunt and honest. And like, you make a mistake, you know, Bruce said it best. Like if I hit you and we're doing a drill, whose fault is that? You know, like if we're practicing getting out of the way of punch and I hit you, I did the right thing. You're the one that's supposed to get out of the way of the punch. And so Ajahn really lived with that a lot, where it's just like, hey man, make it here, you know? And Mark was the one to kind of, you know, put that into my brain. Like, you know, he'd hit me in the face, he wouldn't apologize. He'd be like, hey man, you gotta be quicker. Like, you gotta make sure you're catching up to this, you know, and laugh about it. We all make big jokes. And yeah, but Ajahn, I remember my Ajahn story that I remember, other than this, I don't know if you know about him and his hot peppers. He loves doing pranks with us. He like eats ridiculously hot peppers. Like I think they're called bee pepper, like bolt peppers or something like that. Blot peppers. Sure. I don't know. But he'd go carry around like a Ziploc bag. And you couldn't leave your food. Like if we went and got lunch between the, you know, at lunchtime at seminars, you couldn't leave your food like alone when Ajahn was around. Because like if you had a sandwich, you'd put one of those hot peppers on your sandwich without saying, just because he wanted to see you freak out. And yeah, other than that, though, I remember, like, you know, it was explained because I didn't, you know, I was young. I started martial arts at 13.
Did you start with McFan?
I did. Yeah. Amazing. I started with Mark. Yeah. And I didn't even know what martial arts, like I did Taekwondo with Randy Edwards for like a couple of months. And I just, you know, it didn't resonate with me. And so like I tried other sports, and I was kind of a fat kid when I was younger, and kids like to pick on me. And, you know, I remember I watched a Kung Fu movie. I think it was Drunken Master. And I was just like, I want to do that kind of stuff. And I just remember always going past his old school, and I finally one day just walked in, and lo and behold, he's one of the, you know, baddest dudes, you know, around. And all of a sudden I'm hanging out with all these, you know, crazy old dudes like, you know, Cam and Damon and Chance, and, you know, Chance not an old dude, but Blind Jeff and all those guys. Seth Anderson, if he listens to your podcast, he is an old dude. But we were the young ones. He was one of the old ones. He just always looked really young. But yeah, and then I just started doing martial arts. I didn't know what martial arts was, but I didn't know what Muay Thai or Kali, or I didn't know what any of this stuff was. And it just kept going.
When you first, so you're 13, when you start training with McFan, did he have like a youth teen program, or were you just in there with all the guys?
So it's funny. So I started training. So I guess I have to kind of backtrack a little bit. So when I first started at Mark's gym, I didn't meet Mark McFan. I actually started training with a gentleman called Stuart Godfrey, and another gentleman called Jason Wiles. Mark was busy, you know, and the first time I ever actually, so you asked me if I trained with Mark, like since I was 13. No, actually I didn't. For the first couple of years, I didn't talk to Mark. So, and if you know, is this a family friendly podcast?
It depends on what episode you're watching, you know. It doesn't have to be. Same thing for me around here, you know. Yeah.
Let's just say, you know, if you've talked to John, you know, and you kind of understand what we are used to, like, it's not the most family friendly place to go, you know, back in the day. Mark definitely, as he got older, and like was more, you know, he loved kids programs. He loved teaching children. I would say he loved it more than he loved teaching adults, because he'd usually throw the adult classes off on like Damon or me or Chance, you know. But when I first came in, Stuart and Jason were my coaches. And I remember the first time I ever met Mark McFan, if you ever been to his old gym on Evelyn Hills, not the Sixth Street gym, but the one in Evelyn Hills, he had two bathrooms, and he had like workout place in his office in the very back. There was a ring, and then forward there's like the mats, and then like there's the chairs, and there's the door. And when you go back to the bathrooms, he has little Dixie cups, you know, and if you're thirsty, you get water out of the sink in the bathroom. And I didn't know what I was doing, and I was trying to like get water without taking my boxing gloves off with like a little tiny Dixie cup. So like I'm like trying to like put it in the sink and like turn it. I wasn't thinking straight. And I like, and if you look in his, he's got so, oh, it's so cool. One of the coolest things is like seeing all of the pictures that Mark has hung up in his back room, where like the bathroom and the weight stuff in his offices. He has so many like pictures of like Taki Kimura and him hanging out, and like magazine articles from Black Belt Magazine of him doing seminars with, you know, Larry Hartzell, you know what I mean? Like, it's so cool. And like Mark as a young guy, like still looks, he looks old no matter how old he was. Like at 20 years old, he looks exactly the same, just like with a little bit more hair. And like just him and Greg and Eric like hanging out in the middle of Indonesia doing seminars and stuff. Like, it's really, really cool. But I ended up running into the wall and knocking down one of those picture frames and like shattering the picture frame. And like I hear Mark like, oh, and like he gets up and then he walks over me, like peeks his head in. I'm just like, oh, I'm so sorry, sir. He's just like, ah. He just like walks away. I was like, no, he hates me. That was like the first time I ever had any kind of interaction with Mark McFan. And then Stuart, he's from England, he's from Liverpool. And he had to go back to Liverpool for, you know, circumstances beyond his control at that point. And so finally, you know, and I think I was 15 maybe, and maybe 14 and a half, like something like that. And finally, like I decided to like work up the nerve to like go to Mark and like talk to Mark about it, because I had been training like sparring with adults and stuff like that. I didn't do a kids program. I actually mostly for the first 3 years did private lessons with Stuart and with Jason. I tell people all the time, like I paid my college tuition pretty much in martial arts experience, you know, and traveling around doing seminars with those guys and just seeing everything for what it was without knowing anything of what it is, you know. Like, I had no idea the esteem that Mark had when we went to seminars. He was just, you know, he was just seafood to me. So now as I'm older, I realize like, man, I can literally go anywhere in the world and somebody knows who Mark McFan is, you know, and I think that's really cool. But yeah, so Stuart left, I started training with Mark, and then it just kind of went from there. So yeah, I ramped sometimes, I get sidetracked. But yeah, so that's where I started training with Mark.
And I was talking about some of this. We talked a little bit about McFan on when Big John was on. I've unfortunately never have got to train with McFan. I would love to. He had a scheduled seminar, but like broke his toe. And then he taught at the winter camp that Caleb had that one time. Yeah. Yeah. And I was opening our very first location, and I did one day's of the worth of the seminars. And the next day I missed that one and like a couple others I wanted to go to, just cause we were that, those were on Sunday, I believe. And we were moving, we were starting classes in the new gym on Monday, like the very first Forza location. So I missed out on a couple of opportunities there, unfortunately.
It's crazy, man. Like what he retains, like from everything. Like he taught me jiu-jitsu, he taught me Muay Thai, he taught me boxing, he taught me Savate, he taught me, you know, Wing Chun, he taught me Kali, Sila. I said, how do you keep all this information in your head, you know? And yeah, I actually, you know, I remember, you know, I remember that seminar, that winter camp seminar, and just seeing the look on people's face, you know, like
he did live blade, right?
Yes, he almost cut my toe off. Yes, that did happen. Yeah, I actually remember running because he was like, Chris, do you have one of your knives on you? Like, I was like, yeah, I got one in my room. He's like, why don't you go get it? So, like, I ran and got one of my really sharp, like, foldable Kershaw knives. And he was teaching, like, a backhand strip. And it dropped right in between my toes. He was like, yeah, maybe we should put the knife away. We shouldn't do that anymore. So we got a couple of techniques in with live blade, and then he was just like, you know what, that's probably not a good idea. I remember Kale was like, man, he's got like a hole in the floor and stuff, come on. Yeah, that was funny. That was a good time, man. Yeah, I remember that seminar fondly. That was a really good time. It was kind of like the first time, because I just started hanging out with you guys around then. Yeah, and like really meeting everybody in the LDMA family. And I remember that well. That was a really good time.
It was, yeah, man. I really enjoyed the 2 years that we had those events. Those were like some of the best events we had, I thought. Like, I was just mixed, a lot of different.
That's
like
so cool, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, you got to see so many different ideas. Even like, I remember Crazy Steve teaching, you know, some of his kick stuff. And I was like, dang, Steve's legit, dude. You know, it's like I hang out with Steve and like, yeah, Crazy Steve. I was like, Steve can kick, man. He's got some flexibility over there. That's pretty sick. And then Joey Perry. You know, that dude can jump like 10 feet in the air, even he's like 4'9". Nathan Kirby, you know, we see him all the time, but he's got all the energy in the world, you know.
Both those guys have been on this podcast, Kirby and, really? And Joey. I'm going to have Joey back on. Just are you friends with him on Facebook or?
No, I think so. Yeah. I think I'm friends with him on Facebook, but like, that was the only time I ever really got to hang out with him.
Dude, he's such a cool guy. I've hung out with him in Vegas a few times, but he did this after school program at his gym forever, and he stopped doing it. And he just has a normal martial arts program in the evenings for youth and adults and all that. But now he turned where he had his after school program into like a comic book store, dude.
Oh, really?
And like in collectibles, he sells like tons of action figures, and he's always posting it. And I'm like, damn, that's cool.
He's one of us.
Yeah. Big time. He's selling Mandalorian action figures and G.I. Joes. And I'm like,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Me and Caleb still butt heads all the time. I think he does it. I think he's trolling me, but we cannot come to terms with whether or not Marvel or DC is better. And it drives me crazy. He's all Marvel. Hey, I love X-Men, dude. But I'm just saying, Iron Man's just a poor man's Batman. That's all it is to me.
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah. So some people have been calling for Willem Dafoe to be the new Joker. I saw. I think that would be a cool casting. What do you think about that?
I like him better as Green Goblin. You know,
he is Green Goblin.
I thought, and like, I kind of wanted to stay that way. Like, I like it where like they kind of just stick with one side or the other, because then it's like it gives them more time to kind of really learn the lore of that side. I really liked Joaquin Phoenix as Joker.
Oh yeah, me too.
I just wish, which there, I don't know how deep you get into the lore DC. I love that we're on a martial arts podcast, and of course we're going to talk about
Tommy. Hey, Batman trained, okay?
Batman trained in Kali. Yes, he trained in Kali. Very, very. He's very proficient in Kali, actually. But the lore of Joker, one of the lores of Joker is that he is a god, and he is immortal. And so if they could find a way to turn that on its head and kind of put him into the Matt Reeves universe with Robert Pattinson, I think that would be a really cool move. Or even with Flashpoint coming out, like there's a lot of, like they're going to try to do Crisis Infinite Earth and stuff like that. So I really think that would be a good idea too. I don't want to see any more Joker though. Like I don't want to see any more people doing Joker.
I could see that for sure. Cause there was that weird one with, what's his name? Jared Leto.
Yeah.
It wasn't very good.
I wasn't mad at it. He did his thing. He just was all over the place. He was trying too hard to be, and I think that's what happened. Heath Ledger did such an amazing job creating this original character. And that was the thing, like, and me and my buddy actually talk about this all the time, because like we're really, and he's way more into it than I am, so like a lot of it I'm just regurgitating his information, but like, and I agree with him on this sense of it, like DC is such a diverse, like DC is villains, that's what makes DC. You could do an origins, like a DC origins for all villains. Like Dr. Freeze has an amazing story, Penguin has a great story. You know, Joker, what makes him such a great villain is that he has no origin. He has no story. They tried, but like, I don't want to hear about where he came from. That's what makes him so great, is we don't know what he is. You know, he's just this, you know, all encompassing, you know, chaos and evil. You know, he, like, there is no humanity. He is the lack of humanity, which was the point where Batman is on the other side of that, where Batman is humanity. And that's why it's like that yin and yang that we talk about martial arts a lot. And so if you could start paying attention to the other characters, because Joker's popular and everybody knows Joker, all the emo chicks have Joker tattoos, and all the dudes got freaking, you know, ha 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 tattooed all over them now for some reason, because Jared Leto had it and everybody wants to look like Jared Leto. I get it. I understand.
He's a great looking man.
He's a great looking man. Did I tell you I got to meet him?
No, that's cool. We're at like a 30 Seconds to Mars concert or something.
So, yeah, they were at the Amp. I didn't like get to talk to him. He touched my shoulder though. You know, my heart skipped a beat. But yeah, he was like, let me get some people up on stage, you know, and like we had been hanging out and partying for a second at the concert, and I was like jumping up and down, like, oh, get me out there. He's like, you in the green shirt. And I like went up there. He said something I didn't understand. I was like, yeah, totally, dude. He was like, all right, man. He just like kept going. And so I got to stand on stage while he was like performing a couple of songs. Yeah, it's cool. Nice. My girl was super mad because she like has a huge crush on him. She was like, that's messed up, man. Like our kids are here and everything else, and you go up there. I was like, what? He asked for me, you know.
That's great. Anyways, yeah, man. Yeah. The Amp does have some good shows that come through. I always that's the first place I saw Widespread Panic, man. They're like my favorite band of all time now.
Amp kills. I think that was like one of the last places I saw you in Koro was at an Amp concert.
I feel like I've seen you there quite a few times.
Yeah, I'm there all the time. Like I'm an artist through and through, man. Like, you know, me and my parents used to argue. They're a little bit better about it now. But when I was younger and like, you know, out of high school, and they're like, all right, college now. I'm just like, well, I'm thinking about like being a UFC fighter. So I'm going to go travel around and train for UFC. And they're like, son, why don't you just stick with music? I was like, you realize that if I was doing music like I'm doing martial arts, I'd be literally making the same amount of money, but like I'd probably be like chain smoking cigarettes and drinking every night. So which one would you rather be doing? Like either way, I'm going to be a starving artist. And they're like, but college. And I'm just like, yeah, I want to go to college, but you got to give me time. But you know, they're very supportive. They're just their parents. They worry about me. But now I'm actually able to show them like, no, look, it can be a career path. Like it's cool, you know? Yeah. When you have a black eye at Christmas dinner, she's like, well, but that's okay. I don't mind that. You know,
I told some of my students in one of my history classes the other day, and I like telling people this story, but you know, martial arts can be a career path for somebody. Like it was actually when I was training still with Caleb at Inferno in Clarksville, I was like, I could do this, you know, like you're doing this, like this is something that you could do. I could do this. Like that was just kind of my thought, you know, but I never thought like, oh yeah, that's a profession. It's something that you don't really think about, you know? And then too, so like, I remember when I was really undecided on going to college, like really undecided. I didn't know. I knew I wanted to not make, you know, starvation wages. So I was like, well, what am I going to do? And I, some people in my family are like, you should be a radiology technician. It's only 2 years. You make $36,000. And I was like, but I think I want to be like a historian. And they're like, yeah, what are you going to do with that? You know,
right.
Like martial arts is just a fad, Chris. Okay. Yeah. That sort of stuff. But it's like, no, it's you, anybody can make really anything work. I've seen some people that have such niche professions, but still make a very good living, you know, in an unorthodox way. I think that's more common than you realize. At least that's what I've come to find.
And like for me, like I, you know, I'm the last for like college, dude, go to college. Like that's always been like, I got kids, like you guys are going to college. Like you guys are looking for like awesome futures and careers, you know? And we're coming into a time now where like it matters what your education is, you know, especially right now in like this crazy, like toxic environment that is being bred, you know, through everything going on in the world where like, going and getting an ed, like we're seeing it with high school kids, you know, I at least I'm seeing it with high school kids and junior high kids and, you know, even, you know, elementary school kids, like they're struggling, man, to like get that education the way that we got it, you know? And like, it's funny, like, you know, cause we both know it, but like you talk to young kids, you're like, man, like I used to hate school. Like I can't wait for school to be over. It's like, man, that's like the best days of your life. You're going to miss that whenever you sit there.
Isn't that weird, dude, that we already think that?
You know, like I started thinking at the moment I bought a house. I was just like I, when I was 21 years old, I was just like, I want a big old jackpot. I'm going to buy a car and do all this stuff. And then I was just like, oh, I have bills now. Oh crap. I have to pay for internet and cable. Are you out of your mind? Wait, I have to pay for the water I'm going to drink.
This came like, with the house.
Yeah, exactly. Like I got the house. What do I need to do? You know, oh no, also property taxes. Like it's my property. Well, you gotta pay for your property. So always. Yeah, dude. It's just like, man, I missed. And I hated high school when I was a kid, of course. Like I didn't want to be told what to do by these, you know, Joe Schmoes. Man, I miss it. I miss it a lot, you know. Ugh. It's funny how that works. Follow your dreams. Go to school first. Definitely. School first, dream second.
Hey, everything worked out good for me going to college. I dropped out several times, didn't know what I wanted to do. I was 23 before I went back. And like, I meet people all the time that are 23 that are graduating or getting or have a master's already, maybe depending on if they started like right at 18.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, people will figure it out is what I think. Or they won't. And there'll be lots of both.
Going back to Mark, he's one who taught me that. He, you know, he's like, cause like, I didn't know if I wanted to be a fighter when I first, you know, started. I remember like some dude walked in, I'm not going to name names. Cause I don't even, people probably don't know who he is, but I don't even put his name into it, but he came in, he was kind of a crazy dude. He was like, yeah, I'm getting ready for a UFC fight. I think I was 16 at the time. He was like, yeah, I'm getting ready for a UFC fight. And, you know, we were like, oh, really? That's really cool. And like, I was a kid. I was like, oh man, this guy's going to be a UFC fighter. That's crazy. He's like, yeah, I was wondering if you guys could train me for it. And Marcus was like, yeah, that's fine, man. Why don't you throw some gloves on? Hey, Chris, like I just got done pad work. And he's like, hey, Chris, why don't you throw your equipment on and we'll spar? I was just like, oh, I'm about to fight a guy who's going to be in the UFC. I'm 16 years old. This is a grown man. Like, you know, I was like, oh God. And like, I beat him up really, really fast. Mark's like, get out, dude. Like, you're crazy. Like, I don't want you here. You know, one of those guys, you run into it all the time in martial arts if you've been in it long enough. Like, there's just so many crazy people. And that was kind of the day where Mark looked at me. He's like, I think you should fight, man. Like, I really think you should fight. You know, like, and, you know, he's like, let's get you a couple of, you know, matches and things like that. I think I was 15 then because Stuart was still there. Because I remember I had to wear Stuart's disgusting steel cup. because I forgot my cup to my first boxing match. And you know, like the steel cups that you have to tie in the front and then around to the, and he didn't wash it. He was like, you can keep it, dude. So actually I used that cup my entire competitive, like fighting career was that cup. I washed it, of course. And like, he told me, he's like, Chris, I'm not saying you have to be a fighter. I'm telling you that you have to at least look and see if it's something that you want to do. And you always can encourage that. He's like, dude, you're not gonna ever know if it's for you unless you try it. And like anybody who came in, he's like, if you're sparring, you need to think about maybe taking a fight. I'm not going to make you, but like, why not? Like, you do it in here. It's going to be way easier out there than it is in here. Cause in here you're fighting different people. And like back in the day, I'm sure you guys, I know Caleb went through it. So I'm sure you went through it. Like, there wasn't this whole oh, are you okay thing. It was just like knockdown, beat out, brawl. You get knocked down, you still got a minute and a half left. Get up, finish the match. Don't let them hit you again. Move, move, move. You know, now it's like more of like, okay, well, you need to, like, head trauma exists all of a sudden. So, you know what I mean? Like, so he was just like, you have to always try things to its fullest potential before you can be like, nah, it's just not for me, you know? And I think that goes to college too. Like, and that's for me. Like, I went to a semester or two of college and I didn't not like it. I just wish that I went to a better college more than anything else. And so like, for me, cause I went a little bit older, I think I was 24, and I was just like excited about it. You know, I was just like, I can take all of these classes. And they're like, well, no, you can only take a few of the classes. You have to take these classes before you can take those classes, you know? And I wanted to do like kinesiology, you know, something like that. And that everybody apparently wants to do kinesiology around here, because they're like, yeah, we're booked for the next like three semesters on kinesiology classes. And they're like, why don't you do these classes instead? But I remember sitting there with this 18-year-old girl in like the administrator's office, whatever they call that, the person who's like giving you advice on how to like put your classes together. Yeah, and she was just like, I don't know. This all looks so stressful to me. I'm just like, this is awesome. What are you talking about? Look, I can learn astronomy. I can learn how to do physics. Like, it was just that dynamic of like this older guy who wants to do it. And then like the kid who's fresh out of high school.
And that was me too, man. Like I was a senior in my undergraduate work taking things like biology. Nor do I agree with things at a college level with things like remedial classes, or, you know, I could see now where those gen ed science classes are beneficial, because there are things I talk about in some of my history classes where at least I'm glad I had those courses and got A's in them, you know. But at the time, I was like, this is such a waste of time and money. I can't believe I got to spend my time sitting here when I'm getting a history degree. I'm 27 years old, like, and I'm sitting in this freshman biology class.
You know? It's cool, though, like, because, like, you get those. For me, at least, because, like, for me, like, I have a math disability. Like, I do not math well. And so when I went back to college, like, I had to take a remedial math class, like, remedial algebra. You know what I mean? And he was a high school teacher who's coming and doing it, like, on the side. And dude, like, I finally like was excited for math, because like before it was like such an anxiety thing where like I have to get a good grade. And this time around it's just like, hey man, like, this is remedial, like, you can do this, like, we're gonna break it all down for you. But like those classes too, like, because like I always excelled in English, and I took a placement test to see like where I was gonna be for you know classes, and I ended up acing the English part of things. Mm-hmm. You know, because like I'm good at it. But then I went to the English class, and like I didn't know how to do grammar. I knew how it looked, but I didn't know where to put the commas, you know what I mean? So like my teacher's like, you should have probably done remedial English, man. I was just like, really? He's like, yeah. And he like had to kind of like give me a little bit more time to do things. He's like, you don't put the comma like here, you put it there, like this is a run-on sentence. I was like, really? He's like, now you put too many periods in it. So it's like, oh, my bad, bro. So yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it's all determined on the person. But I also love it whenever you're like in like, cause like science, I didn't need to take, I took biology one and even that was easy, but like there are certain things where you're like, oh yeah. Like it brings back like a memory from being a kid. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh yeah, I remember talking about this when I was a kid, you know, and that brings back another memory of like, oh, and then like me and my buddy, like we made jokes about it. So I think it's always fun to kind of go back and analyze the basics, you know, because the basics are important. That's why we use them, because they work, you know.
You know, I took a course called College Mathematics that was, it's not college algebra, but it's not remedial math, because they tried to do remedial math, but since I had this sunken, like I was taking a class I wanted to take, right? And I, along the way, I took logic and made an A in it, which is a logic is a pre-cal credit. Most institutions like U of A, for example, it's the same, you can transfer it as pre-cal credit. And I was like, I went to the department head of math and I was like, you know, look at this grade I made in this logic class. Like, surely you should just put me in college mathematics instead of remedial. It was like intermediate math or something like that. And then I would have to take college math, you know? So, but yeah, he let me totally skip over and do college mathematics, which was cool. I had a great time in there. It was like, it was the type of math class that, I was after, you know, like basic.
So you excel in that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's like, I want more of a challenge. Yeah, I do that with certain, like music. I do that with music a lot. Like me and my guitar teacher, like he's like, all right, we don't need to do this stuff. I was like, well, can we skip this part too? Like I can do that on my own. He's like, all right, fine. We'll go into music theory. That's fine. Like he's trying to get me to like do like patterns and stuff. I was like, dude, I'll catch on to that. Don't worry about that. I want to understand why I'm doing it. You know, he's like, oh, okay, we can do that. So there's definitely times where it's just like, yeah, let's skip this part and move forward. And, you know, kind of like warm-ups for blue belts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And purple belts.
Only sometimes. Depends on how late I am.
How long did you train with McFan? How many years?
Let's see. With Mark, probably. So I'll say 15.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll say 15 years, 16 years with Mark, and just at the Mama's Boy Academy with that family. You know, I got my blue belt under Greg Nelson. You know, Mark actually, you know, I say drove me. I drove him up to Minnesota, and we trained. I actually rolled with like Pat Berry, and I met Rose Namajunas, and there's this dude named Nate up there who was a wizard, man, and they called him the wizard because he was just like a beast on the ground. And yeah, training with Ajon, you know, meeting Dan. I mean, you know, I've gotten to hang out around Dan a little bit. He's a fun guy, man. Really sweetest guy in the world. So amazing how humble that man is. At least 16 years, at least. I mean, I've been doing martial arts for almost 20 years, if that's the case, you know. So, yeah, 15 years. Yeah. Even when I was, you know, even when I met Caleb at Mark's. You know, one day he was just in there talking to Mark, and Mark's like, hey, this is Caleb, you know. I was like, oh, who's this Amish guy that came in here? And, you know, it turns out, one of, you know, he became the guy that, you know, mentors me now. So it's really interesting. And Mark was so giving and kind about that part too, where like, I just got my blue belt. I was working at UFC gym, which that was a joke. You know, and Mark was kind of trapped there. You know, he had to shut his gym down, you know, and he was kind of trapped at UFC gym. And he was the one who told me, he's like, bro, like, I don't have anything else that I can do for you with what you want to do. Like, we're stuck here. Like, you can go. And he was the one who was like, you need to go to Caleb. Like, Caleb's that next step for you, you know? And even to this day, like instructor camps and all that stuff, like Mark's always, hey, how are you? Like, you know, like you don't need to ask for anything. Like, you're here to help us. Like, you know, I'm the youngest, you know, full instructor under Mark, and I'll probably be the youngest senior instructor under Mark one day. That's my hope. That's my goal, you know? So it's really, really cool to kind of like be the young guy hanging out with all the old dudes. I've been having to like kind of get over that bit of it, because I used to like be real big about like, oh no, I want to be like, you know, I want to be like John Camerota and, you know, Mark McFan and Damon Forrest. And Caleb's like, that's not, you don't want to do that. Like Mark does freaking backflips when he has a, you know, hip replacement. Like, you don't want to be Mark. Like, take care of yourself a little bit better. So it's funny. Yeah. So yeah, 15 years at least. Definitely.
What kind of you know, I hear people talk about that a lot. Like, I'm a full instructor under Inosano, or an instructor. You know, I know JKD kind of has that delineated out. How does that work exactly?
So with Mark, it works the same way that we do, like, you know, rank review. It depends on how much time you've had. It depends on mat time. It depends on, you know, what you're doing outside of, you know, Mark, like, and like, you know, not just showing up to, like, for me and Caleb have had this conversation a lot. Like, for me, like, and me and John have had this conversation. John's like, dude, you're a year overdue for a brown belt. But, like, you haven't been in here training. Well, I've been at the gym. Well, yeah, teaching classes. You haven't been training. You haven't been getting your own time in. So why should you get a brown belt when these guys over here work, you know, working their tails off, making sure that they're getting the stuff done, you know? Oh, you're right. Yeah, that's right. You know, and so Mark that way too, like, where it's very much, it's funny how much influence I see just on a broad spectrum, you know, with all these guys, you know, because they all come from the same lineage, like all of them do, you know, whether it's Dring or Mark McFan, like, these guys all cross paths, you know, because we're all from the same area. And with Mark and like the way that the testing, at least for Inferno, is, it's, you know, like, these are the things that are expected of you at this rank. These are the things that are expected of you at this rank. You know, Mark did like a stripe system as a belt system, you know, like, you get three stripes. Each stripe is a different kind of like test, and then you test for your next belt. But with the full instructorship, it's just years of experience with him. He asks you to show him things that he expects to see from like an associate instructor level three, as opposed to like an apprentice instructor who's like, hey, show me three angles, like things like that. So it's a lot of like rank review for us. It just takes a lot longer, I guess. Like, it took me, I became a full instructor 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So it took me a while. Yeah. And it was very much like, I kind of got, I'm me and Chance definitely were kind of like the backbone for a long time for Mark, you know? So we definitely kind of got thrown to the wolves, you know, trying to figure this stuff out as quickly as we possibly could. Mark really trying to get us like caught up when we didn't have a lot of instructors at the time. So that's kind of more, yeah, it's more like rank review. Sorry, I'm getting sidetracked.
Is he retired now, or is he still teaching?
He teaches out of his house. He lives in Fayetteville off of, you know, and he has like a nice garage. The people who owned the house before, they were actually family friends of mine. The people who owned the house before, they were car people. And so they have like a 2-story garage. And so like the bottom part of that garage, he's made kind of like his little, you know, dojo kind of thing. All of his pictures hung up everywhere, of course, which is awesome. All the old, he still has the same old wrestling mat that you don't ever want to train with in the winter time, because it just is rock hard. It's miserable doing throws on that thing. And like he's not retired, no, but he really only does like privates, you know, and he'll do instructor camp. Like, it sucks because like this year we had to skip instructor camp. We usually do it in June. We weren't able to do instructor camp this year because of everything going on, you know. Mark's older, of course, you know, and I haven't seen him in a while because of that, you know, and I definitely know that Mark like needs his people, you know, and I, you know, because me and John talk about it all the time. John's just like, dude, you just gotta stop by. Like, you just gotta go say hey to him. I was like, I don't want people stopping at my house. So he's like, no, he needs, like, you go by and like you can help him clean stuff or like fix fences and things like that. Like, Mark's still moving, you know what I mean? He might be healthier now than he's ever been. I don't know. Because he's definitely, the last that John told me, like, he's really working hard to make sure that he's taking care of himself with everything going on, you know? So, yeah, he's not retired, but he's definitely slowed down a lot.
Yeah. You
know, it's hard for him, man.
Yeah. No, I've always wanted to train with the guy. But just, you know, because I know he, in terms of, like, the vein of martial arts information and history we're kind of talking about, in Arkansas, I mean, there's also Rodney Hitchcock, it's Ted Wong guy, but man, McFan's it. Like, he's connected to all of these people that we've mentioned, Nelson and Asano and Chai, that are just pure legends in the history of martial arts, you know?
Yeah, and I definitely think that Mark, it falls into that category in a lot of ways. He just wasn't, you know, I like the title that I've heard some say before, like, he's like the man on the mountain, you know, like, he has all of this knowledge, but like, he's just trying to do his own thing. Like, he loves to teach, but he also loves to like be isolated on his own. I mean, for the longest time, he lived out in St. Paul and would drive an hour to get to the gym every single day because he just likes that lifestyle. He's a farm boy. Like, that's what he loves to do, you know? And So like you have this guy who has so much knowledge, and like that's where, you know, I had to annoy him with the information. Like I had to annoy him. I had to call him all the time. Like he would block my phone number sometimes because I'd be like, Mark, like I was on this thing and I'm trying to figure this thing out. He's like, dude, Chris, it's midnight. You called me three times. You could ask me tomorrow. It's like one of those things where like I had to like really push him and get into his brain to like really break everything down to like catch up and get up to speed, you know. And for a long time it was like that, you know. And it's one of those things where, like, you know, Greg and Eric and them, like, they found their way and they found their path kind of through the same thing where like they just had people pushing them like, hey dude, you have all this information, like we got to get it out there, you know. And Mark's that way, but Mark's just, he's such a freaking, you know, he's such an old man on the mountain, man. He just wants to be left alone unless you want to come to him, knock on his door. Hey, what's up? Oh, what's up? You want to do some martial arts? Yeah, let's go. That'd be great. Like, it's just one of those things with him, you know, he's always been that way. So it's really funny because, you know, coming, it's that dynamic between him and Caleb, you know, two of my biggest mentors, you know, like Mark's the guy that's like, hey, I don't want to bother you, but he's like, yeah, what do you want? You know, and Caleb's just like, hey, dude, come here. I need you to do something. Like, this needs to happen right now. I'm just like, oh, you know, and like learning how to kind of balance that a little bit better, you know, because I used to be so, like, I used to idolize Mark as such, especially when I was younger. You know, now I'm finally starting to actually come into my own as a martial artist, as opposed to like being like, I need to be like this. I used to want to be Mark. Like that was like, Mark's such a, you know, badass. Like I want to be that, you know, I want people to like, you know, respect me and love me like Mark. And, you know, it's just like, that's not what martial arts is though. You don't want to be Mark. You want to be Chris doing martial arts influenced by these people, not just doing what they're doing, you know? And so even that's even changed the way that like I teach Kali and I teach jujitsu. Like I used to just teach what Mark taught me, but now it's actually like in the past like 5 years, like I've learned to really come together and like, I don't speak the same language that I used to speak when I teach. Like I simplified it a lot because I used to like speak three different languages in one class, you know, because that's what Mark did. He was like, all right, do, you know, Kenjiseko from, you know, a straight hubud into, you know, like a paxiao da, blah, blah, blah. It's just like, it's a lot of information, man. And like people are like, you know, and like we had to do it as full instructors. Like he expected it. I have sheets and sheets of him testing us. Like, here's all the Chinese translation that you need to know. Go do it. And like me, like when I was there, like I obsessed over it. So like, I still got it. But like, you see some of these, even like, you know, John didn't do it, but I bet John would struggle. But, yeah, so like it's I try to just like, when I look at Kali especially, it's forehands and backhands. Why do we have to make it more complex than that? Of course, like I still use like, you know, the basic five paxiaos, the paxiao cycle drills, you know, and like I'll still talk in Chinese when I'm teaching the kind of more trapping stuff, you know, and I'll still talk in Tagalog when I'm showing like, you know, Sinwali, you know, or Sembradas, you know. But I try to like make it more of like, I'm not saying like Eddie Bravo, but like just simplifying things. Like I definitely, and Dan was the one who showed it at a seminar where like he broke it down like basic 8-6 counts. I don't know if you ever heard of the basic 8-6 counts, right?
Yeah.
Forehands to backhands, you know, forehand, all the way down to backhand, and then bring it back up. All right, now we can split, boom. Now we can go like forehand, backhand. And like, you start to like break it all down. There's endless possibilities. And now like with my students, I'm like, okay, so now check this out. If you have forehand, backhand, take the forehand away, put it in the middle. What do you have? Forehand, backhand. But you can't do the umbrella, or you can't do like, you can't chicken hit it. Like, how do you do it? Like, right? So like where you're starting, like, cause like forehand, backhand, right? That's an umbrella six. But what if I took it and put it in the middle? Now you can't umbrella. It's too fast. Like you have to like find ways to like get lazy about it, you know? Oh, it turns into chicken hitting, you know, like where you're starting to like, kind of break it down where it's like, we get into these fixed ideas and fixed systems. And that wasn't what Bruce Lee's philosophy was about. You know, Bruce Lee's philosophy was about like finding your own path, finding your own way. And it took me freaking, you know, turning, you know, 17 years to figure that out. Or like 15 years to figure that out, you know?
So with the Filipino stuff, how much of that was, Bruce Lee's integration, like how much did he do Filipino martial arts, or was that more of an Asana?
Not anything until he met Dan, from my understanding of it, you know. Dan was that, you know, Dan was kind of like the missing puzzle piece for Bruce in a lot of ways, you know. And you know, I remember Mark telling me stories about whenever, you know, Bruce threw his back out you know, like Dan and him sat down, and like that's where the Tao Te Ching was really written, was like when Bruce was bedridden and Dan was sitting there like drawing it all, or like helping him draw it all up and like write it all down and like getting all these ideas out and like helping him kind of talk through it. Like, and so like when you look at anglings and things like that, like the reason Dan, or the reason the angles are so good is because you had two of the greatest minds in martial arts figuring it out together, you know, locked in a room for hours on end, you know, until 4 o'clock in the morning, figuring the system out, you know. And I definitely know that Bruce's influences always have come from his friends. Bruce was a Wing Chun guy, like, you know, and then somebody came around, like Chuck Norris came around and showed him, you know, check out this karate stuff or whatever it was. And then like, what's that one dude? Joe Lewis. Like, here's how I do this, you know. And like the thing that people don't understand about Bruce, or like people who like just know Bruce Lee as like a movie star, like they're like, yeah, Bruce Lee was here today and was fighting in the UFC. Like, he probably got his ass kicked, man. Like, he's an awesome guy, but like he wasn't doing what martial arts is now, but martial arts wouldn't exist without him. You know what I mean? But what Bruce did that like people need to remember is like, there's information everywhere. There's no such thing as bad information, right? Like, information is good. It depends on what you do with it. And so Bruce would do that. He talks about it in the Tao. It's like, take what's useful. And then if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't mean it doesn't work. It just doesn't work for you, man. Like, that's the whole point of this. Like,
and that's okay.
I'm built differently. Yeah. I'm built differently than Caleb. I cannot, you know what I mean? Like, I can't use my freaking legs like he can use them. And vice versa, like Caleb can't put his legs over his head. He's not very flexible for being, you know, being all skin, bone, and teeth. But like, we have to have different games because of that. Now, the principles are the same, but to build a system for somebody who is different than somebody else, like, you have to go back and realize, like, anybody who wants to be a martial arts instructor, anybody out there listening to this, if you want to be a martial arts instructor, you need to go and look. JKD isn't a martial arts. That's what people get twisted sometimes. JKD, Jeet Kune Do, is the way of the intercepting fist. It's the idea of how martial arts should be perceived. It's an idea that simply means there's only so much we can do in this three-dimensional world. Now adapt yourself to be that. It's what art's supposed to be. That is all Bruce was trying to prove, was like, this is just an art form. Like, this is movement. Like, you are the canvas. Build your own art. You know, mimic, like in music, like I'm going to play cover songs, but then what is my sound though? And I'm going to influence that from like the bands that I listen to and the music that I like. Same with martial arts. Like, you know, my style is very like inside crash, cause I'm a little dude. Like, I got to make sure that I get inside quick, cause I ain't going to be able to play that long, you know, Caleb playing, you know, Johnny Wester game, Nate Murdaugh game. Like, I ain't going to be able to do that. You crazy. You know, I'll try, I'll get hit a lot, but if I can get inside, then I'm going to have a lot of success. And like, everybody's different. And that's, I think that's the important thing to take from the philosophies that Dan and Bruce, you know, and Terry and Gene LaBelle, like all these guys, like, you know, Mark, my favorite thing Mark says, and I say it every single day, two things Mark always says, one, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And then two, practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes habit. If you practice bad habits, that's what's going to happen in real life. So I kind of like preach that to my kids all the time. You know, they do a really bad throw, but it works. I was like, hey man, if it works, it works. Good job. You know, if it works for you 9 times out of 10, then I'm not going to tell you to change it because it works, you know, and that's because you're built differently. You know, I think people get so stuck in that traditional, you know, like, you know, 1, 2 kind of style, like the kata, you know, this is the only way. If you have an instructor telling you this is the only way, man, you got to talk to that instructor. You got to figure that thing out and let him know, like, damn, there's plenty of ways to do the same thing. You know, did I answer the question?
Yeah, we're just podcasting. Yeah. This is how it works, man.
This is my first podcast ever. So I don't know.
It's just like, if we were standing, imagine all the great conversations we had just like at the desk at Inferno or something.
Yeah.
That would have made a great podcast. Like, honestly, why I started getting into this, anytime I have a good conversation with somebody like at work or something, I'm like, God damn it, we should have podcasted this.
Why? You start pulling out your phone, like old school, like, style.
All right, we're just going to sit here and talk for like 3 hours. Let's go. Yeah, but Dan definitely, from my understanding, and I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest historian anymore. Like whenever I was going from brown to red, Mark made me write an essay about like the history of Jeet Kune Do and the history of Filipino martial arts, you know, and like really understanding it at that point. And then like after that, it was like, all right, we're fighting, let's go. And so like I think maybe getting punched in the head so much made me kind of lose some of the history of it. I've actually been promising myself this year I'm going to go back and read all the old books, all like the old Filipino martial arts books and stuff that Mark's told me to read, and try to get more acquainted with it, because like I've gotten so like crash, just get in there, don't let them, they got a knife, grab the knife, don't let them have the knife, like things like that, where I'm trying to be more like, okay, like, but people like the art of it too, they like the you know, big Rita Sawanda, man, her and Pa, like I don't know who would win in that fight. Like I've heard they've had many fights that had to get broken up, but I don't know who would win if it was just them being let off. And Rita's more of the flowery, you know, and Pa's more of like the, hey, I'm going to break something off. And they're both important. You know, Bruce is that way too. Like sometimes you got to float, sometimes you got to stay, man. Like you got to do both, you know. I know that was Muhammad Ali who said it, but he stole it from Bruce. So,
did you ever train with Vunak?
No, I never got to meet Vu. I definitely know a lot about Vu, but I never got to meet Vu.
I've watched a ton of his tapes on YouTube and just here and there over the years. But he's one of those guys in researching all this stuff. It's like he's sort of an outlier a little bit, I think, from some of those other guys. But it's still somebody that it's like, man, I would like to put him on a list of people I would like to train with, you know.
Pick his brain. Yeah. Yeah. He's kind of, from my understanding, he's kind of like a pit bull. You're not really sure what you're walking in on, you know, which Eric used to be that way too. You know, Paulson, I think I've done one seminar with Eric Paulson. And I remember at the beginning of the seminar, he like brings a trash can out to the middle. And he was like, you see this trash can? If you need to throw up, this is where you do it. And you get back to work. You know, Mark's over there like laughing at me. And I'm like, oh, I thought this was like going to be like the Kali seminar that we did, you know, 2 months ago. He's like, oh man, this is not going to be that way. Sorry, you know, but it was a good seminar. I learned a lot. And Paul, Eric Paulson, man, his footlock game, I mean, it was revolutionary at the time. You know, everybody's obsessed with footlocks now. I'm just like, we were doing this back in 2002, guys. Like, where you guys been? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's funny when I think about that.
Eric Paulson is another special name in relation to all this stuff we're talking about. And just like martial arts history, man, he does, like you mentioned, all of these other big name fighters, you know, he's, as I understand it, Josh Barnett's head coach, or has been, you know, Barnett's coach for many years. But man, Eric Paulson, he's been in the game since late 80s, early 90s. I remember watching fights of his and like that were dated to 93.
Mark was in his corner for some of those fights.
Yeah.
Was that fight, dude, where he got his hair?
The long hair fight. Yeah.
Mark was in his corner for that one.
Legendary,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. There was one Mark told me, one of my favorite Eric Paulson stories, because I never, like, you know, Dan doesn't know my name. I know Dan. He doesn't know me. Like, I've been to his seminars, but like, dude, he meets thousands of people, you know, every year, you know, and Eric's that way too. Like, I've met Eric maybe for a minute. Like, I was like, that guy's crazy. And Mark's like, yeah, I know. I was just like, whoa. You know, because I, like, when Mark tells me some of these stories, I'm like, come on, you're out of your mind, dude. There's no way somebody's that crazy. And then you meet him, you're like, oh, okay. So like, I finally just stopped not believing Mark's stories. But he told me one time, like Eric was fighting somebody. It was like a MMA fight in the ring. And he's getting his ass kicked. And like in between rounds, Eric goes and like sits down on the stool. He's like, Mark, you see that chick over there in the third row? I think she digs me, man. Like, just like a maniac. And Mark's like, dude, you're fighting right now. You need to go out there and finish it. He's like, oh, okay, cool. He like went out there and finished the fight. It was funny. And like, when Mark tells me stories like that. And then like, I think the one time Mark was on the phone with him
It was like back, you know, earlier times, and he was just like, Eric, like, how you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm doing good, dude. You know, like, I'm trying to lose some weight right now. And he's like, how much are you weighing? And Eric's like too fucking much. That's how much I'm weighing right now. Just stuff like that. Like just hearing those funny, just, you know, these are his buddies. These are his like best friends. And like, I'm just over here, like, you know, eating popcorn, like, oh, what's next? You know, hanging out with Greg Nelson, one of the sweetest guys in the world. You know, and one of the scariest, strongest, like, oh, his wrestling hurts. Like, it's one of those things. It hurts, you know, and like learning so much from these guys just through passing, just like being some kid that's like following Mark around like a lost puppy. Like, are we doing martial arts over here today? You know, like, see if I'm hungry. It's like, we'll eat later. Keep doing martial arts. Like, it's just funny to think about. Yeah, they are, you know. They were just doing what we were doing, and then somehow it worked out for them. Like, we were just punching each other in the face, being crazy kids, you know, and now look at us. We're running gyms and, you know, making the future for the next kids. We're just trying to do it a little bit, you know, a little bit safer. That's all.
Yeah. Did you see that Spencer Fisher article I shared the other day?
No.
Google Spencer Fisher. Like, the headline is all like flashy, like, oh my God, look at this. But pretty much his brain damage at 42 is at such a place that like he can't remember his own kids' names.
It's a thing, man.
It is.
You know, Caleb and me had that conversation back in 2015, I want to say, or 16 maybe, where like I was driving home from fight team one night and I blacked out on the highway, you know. And, you know, it happened to me again last year. Like, I would just black out. I would just pass out. And I was driving my car, blacked out, you know. And so Kale's like, you just need to, like, take a break, man. And that's what I did a long time ago. I just took a break from fighting. Like, I was just like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I got to take care of myself first. But when you're, you know, hungry and you have nothing else and, like, this is your dream, your goal, like, you're going to do whatever it takes. And you hear all these guys talk about it. I mean, we've seen it in boxing for how long, you know. Why is MMA any different? And people are like, well, but they didn't get hit that much. It's like, well, you didn't see them training for the past 3 months getting ready for that fight, you know? And like, even me talking to my fighters now, you know, these hoodlums, these 23-year-old freaking testosterone hoodlums, like, hey guys, if you're not wearing headgear, you're not punching each other in the head. Hey, you guys sparred hard 2 weeks ago. You're going to wait 2 weeks from now. Like, you guys have to take your time. You can't do it slow. You can't do it fast, period. You guys need to be trying to help each other, not hurt each other. Cause now he's got a fight in 2 weeks and you just knocked him out. That's a problem. You know, like that, these are things that we used to do, you know, but you know, young kids, they know better. They're going to be UFC fighters one day, you know.
I'm training one of them right now. Like, I've got a guy's got a kickboxing fight coming up February 6th. So yeah.
And like, it's just like that whole flow state, man, like you're going to find it so much better just doing drills. And pushing drills, same thing over and over and over again. 10,000 hours, do the same combination 10,000 times. Mark used to make me come into the gym for pad work, 100 kicks on the right leg, 100 kicks on the left leg. All right, now we're going to do pad work at the end, 100 kicks on the right leg, 100 kicks on the left leg. And not like just 1, 2, 3, 4, no, power kicks. You know, I remember I do this now with my kids too. I still copy Mark all the time, but like he'd be like 1, 2, 2, 2. I'm just like, what am I doing wrong? He's like, figure it out. I'll tell you 3 when you do it right. So like, sometimes it was like 150 kicks or 200 kicks on the right leg, you know, because he's like, no, you're going to get it. You're going to do the technique the way I need you to do the technique, you know? And especially in fighting, like you gotta take care of your body. You don't want to break your body down. You want to build your body up. And if I'm getting punched in the head, you know, and throwing as hard as I can, you know, pulling my shoulder out and straining my muscles all the time, there's time for it, you know. But Caleb says it best. He's like, bro, I know you're tough. You're a fighter. I get it. You're tough. I know you can survive a good punch. I need to see you do this, you know, technically, you know. Like, I was supposed to test for my black belt next week under Caleb. And Caleb's just like, man, if you're not going to go out there to perform and you're just going to go out there to survive, because I know you can survive, that's not what I want. I want to see you perform. So if you need to wait, you need to wait. I was just like, yeah, you're right. I need to wait, you know? And I think that's important for fighters, especially young fighters. And like, I'm young. I get it. I put way too many knives. Like, look at how crooked my nose is at 30 years old. I used to be handsome, you know? Like, I put miles on myself trying to be the tough guy in the gym.
and it just doesn't work out, you know, because by the time you're ready to fight, you know, your chin's compromised, your head's compromised, your body's compromised. If you can go to a fight feeling like $100, like that's the goal. It's never going to happen because you're training all the time. But if you can go in there feeling the best you've ever felt, you're going to have a good fight no matter what. If you go in there like beaten down, broken, and oh God, man, my shoulder hurts, or you know, you hear it all the time, like, oh, I broke my ankle, I'm just gonna have to wrap that up and like keep going. It's like, oh, it's not gonna be an easy fight for you, man. And then you're gonna have to take a couple months off instead of like, you know, look at jiu-jitsu tournaments. Why do we train hard for jiu-jitsu tournaments? Why are the injuries so much less? You know, well, because it's fun. You know, why can't we do that with MMA training? MMA training can be fun. It doesn't have to be this beat down brawl out. You guys can fight each other and like be like, good shot, man. Oh yeah, cool. Or you can even be like with your partner, like, oh, they hit you hard. Like, hey bro, let's pull back just a little bit. And like, I was guilty of it, man. Me and Nate Murdoch, we used to have beat down brawl outs. And we'd always start with that conversation of like, all right, we're just going to flow spar. And like, I'd hit him a little too hard. And then he hit me hard, and then I'd hit him harder. And then he kicked me upside the head, and I'd be on the ground and be like, dang it, dude, I did it again. You know, like every time it ended that way, you know? And it took us a long time to learn how to like really figure it out, where she's like, oh, no, it's okay, you hit me hard, oh, my bad, dude, oh, okay, we're good now. You know, it's definitely important.
It is.
You said, man. Spencer Fisher.
Yeah, you remember Spencer Fisher, right? UFC
OG. Yeah.
He has some horrible brain damage, some alarming symptoms, like the things that he said he was suffering from are, for his age and for his many, you know, and he was in some wars. That's what he was known for. But it's unfortunate. But you know, I read it to the class. We had like 10 people spar the other day, and I was like, hey, you guys settle up, I'm going to read you this article real quick. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, so let's not be that guy someday. Like, that guy. It starts with you guys taking care of each other, you know?
Straight up, man. And then like, and it goes back, like people got real mad at Dana White for saying it, but man, I couldn't agree with him more. This is not a career. This is an opportunity. There's things after this that you got to be worried about. If you want to be a fighter and you want to make your paper, I get that, man. But you got to find a path after that, because you only have a few years in this game, you know? And like us being the older guys who really went for it and tried it out, and we realized like, hey man, it's not for everybody, but I still love martial arts and I want to teach martial arts. That's fine too. But always have that in the back of your head. If you're a fighter, be a fighter, be the best fighter you can be a world champion. One day there's going to be some young buck who's going to take that spot from you. What are you going to do after that? You see it with NFL players and NBA players. Well, actually NBA players, not so much, but NFL players, you see it all the time. These dudes come straight out of college or high school. Even they start making millions of dollars. They get out of football 4 years later, bankrupt, broke, you know, because they don't understand, oh, this isn't finite. Like, this is finite. Like, this only happens for a second. And then you got to figure out what you're going to do with your life. I guess I'm going to go be a used car salesman. You know, don't do that. Have a plan. Conor McGregor, everybody's a fan of Conor McGregor, who's an MMA fighter. Whether you like him or not, you're a fan. He talks about it. He's like, dude, I'm in it for 7 years and then I'm getting out. He understood the game. He's like, I'm doing everything I can. I'm going to make as much money as I can, as quickly as I can, without taking any damage. And then I'm leaving the game. You know,
he's fighting today, by the way.
No, he's fighting next week. Today's Max Holloway and Calvin Kattar.
Oh, man. Yeah, which I'm excited. Oh, yeah. I'm excited about both those fights. I was thinking that McGregor was on that same card.
No, it's on the 20th.
All right.
You're going to watch 20th. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like the next year. So oh, yeah. I'll watch it too.
And I want Poirier to win.
Hey, dude, Poirier is such a gamer, man.
He's killing it right now. He's killing it. You hear about Ortega? He's fighting Volkanovski.
Oh, title. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Oh, he's one of my favorite fighters.
Brian Ortega, he is, man. I remember when he knocked out Frankie Edgar, I was like, wow.
And like barely broke a sweat doing it. He was like, pat, 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 pat. Like, dude, put him down. That was sick.
I'll tell you a great fight to watch if you haven't seen it recently. I just watched it yesterday. Is Matt Brown versus Eric Silva. Holy shit.
Is that the elbow?
No, that was Diego Sanchez.
Sanchez, that's what I'm thinking of.
But yeah, dude, Eric Silva, I mean, yeah, well, here's the thing. It was many elbows. Matt Brown was throwing like quadruple lead hand combos, like jab, body, head, head with the hooks, like, and getting in there and like splitting up the middle with that upward elbow. He ended up finishing him with an elbow on the ground, but he just, and it was such a grind, and he got kicked, you know, Silva's a southpaw. He got kicked in the liver by Silva's rear leg in the first round, and then mm-hmm. Silva rushed him, and Silva ended up, like, I want to say taking his back, but after that, he beat the shit out of him. I was like,
yeah, man. Matt Brown, and that dude, he's old, man.
He I'm is. Surprised
he's coming, he's making a comeback, you know, and they got Carlos Condit going out there too, and I'm just like, whoo.
It's going like, to be a couple good fights.
I can't bet on that fight. I'll bet on the Holloway fight. I ain't betting on this fight.
Man, who? I watched fight, that Cater guy fight someone else. It might have been Matt Brown.
No, Cater's a 145er.
Who did I watch him fight last night? We watched him fight.
Calvin Cater.
It was a bigger name guy, I feel like.
I want to say he fought.
Oh, it's Jeremy Stevens. It's Jeremy Stevens. Yeah,
he fought Jeremy Stevens.
He beat him.
I want to say Calvin Cater fought somebody on short notice, like a big name title fight kind of deal, and like almost won. And I want to say it was like Khabib, but I'm not positive on it.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch
it. I might have been thinking about somebody else. Yeah, Cater's a good fighter, man. But there was one fight where you watched him fight and you're like, who is this guy? Or maybe that was, no, who was the other dude that has a Russian name?
Zabit?
No, not Zabit. It's a white dude, but like he has like a Russian name. But he came out and fought somebody and like was throwing like crazy spin kicks and stuff. Like, I think it starts with a V. And maybe because he fought Cater too. Hold on, I'm going to cheat. I have too many freaking fighters in my head. They need to stop doing fights every day of the month. Not Volkanovski, no. Martial arts record. Jeremy Stephen. He lost it as a beat.
Zabit's damn good, man.
Yeah, he is. That dude's an animal. Who did he fight? I can't remember, but he's a good fighter too. He came out and just freaking brawled it out with somebody at 145. I can't remember. That's who I was thinking of though. Somebody came out and like it was like the last minute thing fighting for a title, and this dude was just like, I'll do it. Or like, so, like it was like a title contention or something like that. He's like, I'll do it. And like he almost did it. And people were like, it was kind of like that. You remember when it's been so long. Not Ian. The dude from Brooklyn, not that trains with Frankie. He fought Khabib and like almost knocked Khabib out. Because Khabib was supposed to fight Connor and Connor dropped out. And so this dude's like, I'll do it, man.
Oh, Iaquinta.
Iaquinta. Right? Iaquinta. Yeah.
Iaquinta. Yeah. Whatever.
And he caught him. He rocked him a little bit. And you're like, no way. And even Al was like, what's going on? And then Khabib just grabs him and puts him on the ground. He's like, no, no, no. We're not doing this. No. I'd wrestle bears.
Dude, and I bet we'll see Khabib fight again.
Oh, yeah. He was talking to Dana the other day.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
I think he's going to come out and fight George. I think it's finally going to happen.
I'm down for that for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The problem is that he didn't want to go up and wait, but I bet now that he's kind of had a couple, you know, tiramisus in him, he's like, yeah, I could do 185. No problem. You know, that'd be for a title too. So,
yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah. I'd be down for it. Yeah, man. Anyways, but yeah, Kali is a great martial arts. And going back to like fighters and stuff, dude, like I encourage my fighters, they don't do it because they want to do their own thing. But I encourage fighters, if you want to be a fighter, you need to do Kali. Like, there's nothing better for dexterity than swinging two sticks around all the time, like learning how to use your hands separate of each other. It's like the difference between playing a recorder and playing a piano. You know what I mean? Like, you have to learn how to use your body separate from, you know, this side and this side. It's so important. So I you know, I hope maybe you got your fighters doing it, but my fighters, they're like, no, we're just going to punch each other in the face and post it on Instagram. So I got to give them a hard time a lot over here in Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah, man, it is. It's something I've always seen as beneficial. Especially, yeah, I don't know if you saw or if you're friends with TJ Brown. He's been training some
Oh, has he?
Arne East or something with Bill Barton.
Really? That's cool. Good for him. Yeah, one of my buddies just actually, he used to train with us at Inferno, Eric Acuna. He just recently moved over there. He tried to stick around, but I was like, hey man, if you're gonna go to Little Rock, you might as well train with the best in Little Rock. So I told him to go train with Rolly and them. But yeah, him and TJ have been training a lot together. Maybe TJ can get Eric to do some collie, man. Come on. Like
Yeah,
that dude
it
needs to
is.
do collie.
It's a lot of fun. McMillan's been going down a little bit of a collie rabbit hole, and I work with him on Sunday mornings. He teaches morning classes here at the gym, so we've been training a little bit on the side. But we do a little bit of everything. I love just like having sessions where I do a little bit of striking, a little bit of stick and knife, a little bit of maybe some takedown clinch work. I mean, that's what I like about MMA training is that you get to encompass more. And for us in the future, because dude, our MMA classes has not had any size or depth to it in some years. It used to. I used to have a lot of people that were interested in it. They were all 18 to 25 and broke.
Cyclic like everything else, man. I mean,
Yeah.
jiu-jitsu's the thing right now. Everybody's doing jiu-jitsu, and in 4 years it's going to be something else. I see kickboxing coming back. I see stuff like that coming back. So it's just cyclic.
Yeah,
MMA will come back around in classes.
I think so. It's an interesting time in the history, just like since we've been involved. Like you were just said a minute ago, like, oh, there's so many freaking fights. I can't. It's
Yeah, there's a lot
it
of fights,
used
man.
to be, where we would be waiting for the one big fight or
Yeah.
three, four big fights we would see that year. That
Planning
was
out
it.
watch parties and stuff, you know? Well, you know, it's like, oh, right, it's Saturday. Crap, I gotta get, hold on, ESPN Plus. Oh man, I forgot to subscribe. Oh no. Which, hey, good for them, man. Biggest sports deal ever. That's awesome. But it's a lot of information on a weekly basis. And people are like, have you seen this fight? Or I'm just like, man, no, I'm still talking about Anderson Silva. So I don't know what's going on. It's really out of who,
For real.
so, but yeah, man, I definitely believe that martial arts, first it was Taekwondo, right? Like that was the thing when we were kids. And then it was, Muay Thai and boxing and all that stuff, kickboxing, kind of like, more hardcore Taekwondo stuff, and then it turned into, MMA, Nogi Jiu-Jitsu is really popular right now, but like MMA was kind of like the beginning of that, where people are like, well, you can UFC, you remember that question? Like, you guys do UFC here? Yeah.
Yes.
People don't ask that question anymore.
That's what
You
I'm
know, and
saying, man. I would say all along about like 2013 is when people stopped asking that question. Like what you were saying occurred with people coming in, like saying stupid shit, like that guy
Yeah.
used hard. It's like, man, that's happened to me several times, but it's to a place now where it doesn't happen a whole lot. It's just like, I don't know if it's because we
Interesting.
have a culture, processes, but I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't. It just happens way less frequently,
Yeah. Well, like I remember when I was, I think, 18 years old, one of my buddies, we were like driving back from Panama City Beach, and like we started getting into it because like he was like pretty much saying like UFC is not like mainstream, UFC is not like soccer. I was like, no, UFC is not like soccer, but it's bigger than basketball. He's like, how is it bigger than basketball? I was just like, bro, it's world. Like all around the world, people are watching a pay-per-view event.
That's a
He's
good
like, dude,
point.
they'll never make the kind of money that an NBA basketball player makes. And I was just like, you just watch, man. You give it 10 years.
It's coming.
You give it 10 years. Conor McGregor made $10 million. Where I'm sitting there like, bro, you don't know what you're talking about. Like this is huge, And then when it gets huge, what do people do? They try to find that thing that's not as big, to try to like, make it more real for them, And jujitsu is that thing right now. It's like jujitsu is something that we don't have to worry about like making money doing it, you know, and people wanted to do MMA. I mean, how many people have come in and out of your gym being like, I think I want to try being an MMA fighter. How many of those dudes actually stuck around? You know, like, it's hard. Like, I don't like doing MMA that much anymore. Like, I like teaching MMA and I like training MMA, but like whenever it's like, all right, put little gloves on, let's get on the wall and get to work. Like, I got to be in the right mindset or I'm just like, ugh, this is going to suck, dude. Jiu-jitsu, it doesn't matter what mindset I'm in. If you want to do some rolls, I might not be feeling it. And then the moment we start rolling, you know what I mean? Like, I'm in it. Like, all right, let's go. This is fun. Yeah. You know, I just think jiu-jitsu is kind of that. Yeah, that's Indy. That's my dog.
Puppy.
One of my many dogs. And jiu-jitsu, you know, it's getting more and more popular. You've watched. It's getting more and more popular. I'm just waiting for the collie cycle. I'm just waiting for the collie to get big, you know, and then stick fighting to actually become a thing, you know.
Dude, I've got my dog brother's VHS tapes right across.
I see. That's awesome.
Five volumes. Yeah,
Caleb had him on Mark. He had Mark Denny on the podcast, on his Inferno Cast podcast.
Yeah,
I thought that was so funny hearing him talk about it. You know. Yeah, that's funny. Him and Mark don't have the best history.
Yeah,
him and Mark McMahon.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah. They don't have the best history. Mark's just, you know, it's fine. I don't know enough about it, but Mark, anytime I like say Denny, he's just like, okay. I remember actually trained one guy. He's like, I'm going to go do a dog push thing. I was like, okay, cool. And like, I literally just taught him like, all right, what I want you to do is like, you know, pass the one and then deflect the two and come in with a 1-2 of your own. And like, that's all I had him train, like over and over and over again. He's just like, yeah, but like, what if they do this? I was like, I promise you, all they're going to do is run at you like that. That's all they're going to do. You know what I mean? And he like went over to California. He did it. He came back. He's like, dude, I fought like three of them. I beat all of them up with that. And I was just like, yeah, you know, it's not real stick fighting. No offense to them, but you know, stick fighting that I know is like the Illustrissimo stick fighting where it's just like you and another guy, no padding, whoever draws blood, that's the game. Like 30 second rounds, if nothing happens, like that run and crash thing, like, man, you ever have a stick swung at you full force? Do you really want to run in on that? You know what I mean? Like, no way. Like, if you got a stick, I'm back. You know, it's like saying like a knife. It's just like, I'm not going to run right in on a knife. Like, run in and try to, you know, no, you got to be careful with your angles. You know, you got to move. You got to really see what they're wanting to do. You got to defang the snake before you start hitting them upside the head, you know? So, yeah, Mark, I've never met the guy. He seemed like a really cool guy on the podcast. So I think he looks cool. But Mark always just kind of like, you know, whenever he got mentioned around him, you know, whenever Dave, the guy that I trained, whenever Dave was like, oh yeah, Dog Brothers, Mark's just like, yeah, that's fine. But let me show you this instead. It was funny.
Yeah.
Oh, the old.
Yeah, they're a part of the history as well. Oh, hold on. For sure.
Happened. There you go. I'm back. Nope, no, I'm not. God dang it.
Your audio go? Hold on. Let's see.
Here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
What is going on? One second. Oh, I know. Haley? Unmute. Here. Okay.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I was using some different AirPods that aren't mine because I lost mine. And then,
dude, I lost mine too, bro. I'm not even gonna lie. I'm about to show you the empty case. Pretty sure I left them. Like Cora did you can do the Find My iPhone on them.
I couldn't find mine. Yeah, mine for some odd reason aren't connected to that. I don't know why. It's really annoying. So
yeah,
run around.
I was able to. Mine are probably in my office at Morrilton, is what I concluded.
Oh yeah. Like mine. If you look at. Yeah, I see if I can't show you a little closer. We got a little New Yorkie puppy, and he's been getting a hold of them. So and these are hers.
I made the joke about I was like that my yellow lab mix ate my AirPods. I don't think she did, but you never know, man. She ate a bed today. So
there's a video of somebody's dog who ate the AirPods, and they're like playing music.
Yeah, I've seen that. In their belly. Oh man. Well, dude, let's go ahead and wrap it up, man. But hopefully we can get together to train some of this stuff we're talking about sometime. or man, we can have another podcast someday.
Anytime, man. You know, we talked earlier. I was like, oh, I'm coming to Russellville on Saturday, and you're like, nah, we'll just do it. I was like, oh, that's even better. Cool.
Well, and too, dude. Anytime you want to come down, because I almost was like, well, man, maybe I could just like, we could train and then we could do the podcast, you know. Yeah, but man, we should do something like that sometimes. Do a 2-for-1. Come down, hang out, train, go get something to eat, do a podcast, drink some coffee. All great things.
Yeah, definitely. I know next week we got rank review here, and then black belt testing on that Friday. We got like four of our senior brown belt kids, which is really cool. It's like one of the first black belt testings for these kids. First, we're like, Danny's gonna be there, so they're all like, oh no. And then second, like, I literally like Kyan, right?
I don't know if I do.
Competitor, blonde hair kid. He's like one of our big competitor kids. Gym rat. Like, his parents punish him by saying, like, you're not going to jiu-jitsu if you don't clean your room. He's like, okay. What else do you need? I literally started with him as like a yellow belt. You know what I mean? And now he's a brown belt, turning 13, testing for his black belt. So it's really cool to like the kids that I get to watch kind of come up and test. You know, I'm excited.
It is special, man. I've got kids that have been with me since that very first location I was talking about earlier, and are black belts now, or have been with us throughout, you know, three locations, 5 years or longer. It's awesome to see them come up, and it's happening. It happens more and more. So we've been in business since 2012. So we're to a point of mass and depth in the bench where it's just like every time, and it's getting crowded in here already. Yeah,
I haven't seen you guys post videos, man. It's getting real crowded in there. It's awesome. It's awesome to see.
Yeah. Well, right on, bro. It's always great talking to you, Chris.
Yeah, you too, man.
Have a good one, dude.
Later.
All right, we'll see you.